Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
220,000 students are about to go through what may be, for many of them, the most stressful event of their lives so far, the Year 12 exams. They kick off in New South Wales this coming Monday, followed by Victoria at the end of the month, and all other states at least by early November. Now, these final exams can be a nightmare for most Year 12 students, with many studying all day and all night, and I feel that pain, sleeping perhaps only a few hours, eating too much or skipping meals altogether, while others may be fighting off procrastination or a lack of motivation. This has been such a long journey. Why is this taking so long? Please let it be over. The pressure's built on family and friends as well. You're trying to help diffuse some of those stresses during the time. Sometimes it can work well, other times you feel like you're just at the periphery of another person's war. Then there's the question of what comes next. With all that pressure building to exams, what happens after they're over? While the exams are seen as crucial regarding marks and getting into university, how important are they really? Joining us in the studio today is Rowan Kunz, educator, entrepreneur, and author of Secrets of HSC Success Revealed. And together, over the next half an hour or so, we're going to unpack some of those concerns, fill in the details, perhaps provide a valve for mums and dads, brothers and sisters in coping with this stress. Welcome to Open House, Rowan.
Thanks for having me.
When did you do your HSC?
So I did my HSC a little while ago. So I graduated in 2004, so 10 years exactly.
Wow. And you went on to study law?
That's correct, yes.
Immediately, were the marks everything you hoped they would be?
So I did go immediately, but they certainly weren't everything I hoped it to be. So I worked really hard during Year 12. I had a goal. You know, I needed to get at the time an ATAR equivalent of 99.6 to study law.
Yeah.
Got to uni, studied law and discovered this is nothing like the John Grisham novels that I read.
So you weren't the star of the firm.
No.
So you reorientate your life and fall back. And I say fall back because your life until that point has been about education, but you've been the student.
That's right.
Now you turn the tables and you become an educator. Why?
I sort of fell into it, to be really frank. I mean, I was approached by a number of students when I was at uni myself who were needing a bit of help and guidance throughout their senior years, so years 11 and 12. And I literally started helping because it was an obligation. It was family, friends, it was siblings. Like, all right, yep, I'll spend some time. And as I started working with them, one of the really big things that I was noticing constantly was the questions that they were having, not necessarily around like the content, you know, like how do I solve this problem or what does this mean? It was, you know, the questions around how do I balance, you know, I'm so stressed. How do I stay motivated? How do I stop procrastinating? So it was all those other skills. And what I was seeing was that there weren't really any good answers out there at the time. So students were having expectations that they had to study, you know, crazy hours and not sleep. And I looked at my own experience and it was nothing like that. And I thought, well, surely there's better answers out there and maybe I can help.
So it was an argument about process. There's plenty of education about the subject matter, but sometimes juggling it all along with our adolescence is the real issue.
Definitely. That was exactly right.
Okay. So it's been a relatively short period of time since you did your HSC, a lot longer for me. So what stresses are there on students today that as parents, maybe we haven't got a full handle on in your experience as a tutor and as an educator?
I mean, I think even from when I graduated 10 years ago, a lot has changed in terms of the intensity and pressures that exist. I think part of that is largely, you know, there's this increasing, and typically for most of the competitive courses, there's increasing ATAR cutoffs.
Yeah.
Because they're driven by demand. So what you find is that because there's five or so, you know, your law, your science, your medicine, your engineering, your commerce that students want to do, what happens is the demand increases and these cutoffs get higher and higher and higher, which means it's harder and harder and harder for students to get into them. And that creates this really sense of this pressure cooker environment, which means that for a lot of students, they really do view it as the be-all, end-all, unfortunately, where I think, you know, when I went through, there was a greater understanding that there's more options than perhaps just the five big sort of disciplines that you're thinking about.
The interesting thing when I hear you talk about the ATARs now, and was it 99.what to get into law?
99.6.
When I did my HSC, it was still marked in the old 500s. That long ago, and yet it wasn't anywhere near that high as a proportion of the available mark. A lot's changed in that period of time where very few are being selected, which means possibly there are more of us not getting our first or second choice, possibly relying on our third to get into university. But how do we negotiate that with ourselves when that result comes back on the SMS in a few months' time?
Look, and I think that's the interesting thing that a lot of students struggle with is that they might have an idea of what they want to do, and then there's that pressure of how do I get there? And while there's general awareness that there's those other options and those other alternatives, I don't think a lot of students spend enough time investigating them.
Yeah.
So that when they get that SMS, you know, and it's not quite what they were hoping, it can be a bit of a surprise.
And a shock, and possibly really destabilizing. We're going to get to that in a few moments' time. Let's start with you as a tutor. You have a tutoring business, it's Art of Smart, and provide online study resources as well. What's the most common question you're asked in your space by students approaching the HSC now?
I think at the moment, the really big question is, you know, how do I actually learn as much as possible in the shortest amount of time? A lot of students are unfortunately at that point where they're a couple of days out and...
Yeah. It's too late to cram now, surely.
Well, a lot of students don't believe that. And I think that's just because, you know, things have happened, they've left it to the last moment. So yep. the most common question is typically, what can I do now that will help me the most over the next couple of days for those exams?
Okay, and the answer would be?
Teach other people.
Really?
Yeah, teaching other people. I mean, it's interesting because it's one of the things that I found was a little counterintuitive from the research I've done with top performing students, but teaching other people is a really brilliant way. It's highly active to lock that information into your mind, but you're also getting instantaneous feedback, you know, from someone else. Have I got this right? Have I got this wrong? Can I communicate it clearly? And if not, it means, well, actually, maybe I need to go away and do a little bit more work on it.
Cool.
So sit down, teach a parent, teach a sibling, teach a friend. It's a brilliant way really to just lock in that knowledge and also get some feedback.
What about tricks with what is now an encyclopedic compendium of notes and resources that we've collected through all of our assessment tasks, and here we are only hours or days away from those first exams? If I haven't ordered them, is it too late to order them now? And what's the most effective way? Or is that a personality question?
It's a loaded question. Look, my recommendation would be if you've got all your notes and they might not be as ordered as well as you like, don't stress too much about ordering it because it probably isn't the time. My biggest recommendation is pull them out, get pen and pencil and go through them and just start annotating, you know, writing down key points, underlining. The act of writing is going to be really, really helpful from a memory point of view. It's what you're going to be needing to do in the exam, pen to paper. And it's also just then ensuring that you're covering the breadth of the material.
This has been quite a journey for a lot of us. We've spent the better part of 2 years or more, if you're extending the HSC from the moment you get to high school, it's always there. It's always that huge cloud, and it gets closer and closer and bigger and bigger. And then from year 11 on, then you're starting to do your assessment tasks, that kind of stuff. So motivations are key now. I'm this close to the end, and at the same time, it's so vitally important I get it right. How do I reconnect with motivation if I'm feeling so very tired?
Two recommendations. One, actually spend some time to get out of the study room and get out. I mean, the weather's beautiful at the moment. Spend some time outside, go for a run, get some exercise. It'll help get some perspective. Mm-hmm. I think you need, you know, motivation's a big part of it is how you feel physically as well. If you're feeling dead physically, it's going to be hard to be mentally motivated. The second piece is actually spend some time trying to get some clarity around what you actually want to do for next year. That might be spending some time really looking at the courses or the course that you want to do at uni or the options that you have. Even if you can, making a trip on the weekend to the university.
Really? Even before you do the first exam?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't spend a whole lot of time there because of just the element that you probably want to be spending some time preparing for that exam.
And everybody else is going to be expecting your time to make that time too.
That's right. But it's very much about, I think, trying to create that picture of what you're working for and what you're working towards. And sometimes you can do that without needing to visit a place.
Yeah.
But sometimes you actually need to go there, smell it, breathe it, touch it, to go, yep, hey, this is what I'm working towards. I've only got 3 more weeks more of hard work. Let's do it.
Great way to keep it real, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
To get a sense of whatever it is you're going to do, just be in the space for a bit if you're not breaking any laws. So, the day before the exam.
Yep.
Do I study? Do I cleanse intellectually? Do I disengage? Do I re-engage with newfound fervor?
I would make some recommendations about doing some study, so intellectually engaging.
Right.
My recommendations would be 3 things to do the day before an exam. Number one, pull out those notes, no matter how disorganized they may be, and go through it once. Go through it just writing out the key points or dot points. Number two, do a past paper. It doesn't have to be closed book. It doesn't have to be perfect. Just go through it, dot point your answers. And then the third recommendation would be teach someone. Do that the day before. It's going to give you a coverage of the syllabus. It's going to really build the knowledge, get you familiar with the questions. But it's also not so intense that you're mentally sort of exhausting yourself before that next day.
Our number on Open House is 1-300-40-2020. G'day, Abe. Welcome to Open House.
Hey, Dwayne, and hey, Rowan.
Thanks for joining us. So your question is about the importance of what comes next with the exams if we're still not sure what we want to do. Are you in that space?
Not really. Like, I'm talking for my whole year group, I suppose, and it's a question that most of people ask and go, well, how important is the HSC if you don't know what you're going to do after the HSC? So that's a big question that has arisen in, like, most conversations nowadays.
That's a common question in your experience, Ron?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so.
What do we do with that?
Look, there's sort of two responses to it. I mean, the first is that in some sense, if you don't know what you want to do, the HSC is important in giving you options.
Yeah.
You know, if you do as well as possible, you've got the most amount of options around thinking about then what you might want to do for university or not university the next year. But on the flip side, you know, there's the amount of conversations that I've had with students post high school and post the HSC, where you never talk about the HSC again. You never talk about an ATAR again.
So right, too.
Which means that in many cases, it's actually not as important because there are so many back doors into uni. There's so many alternate entries and pathways to study. So yes and no, it is and it isn't. It just depends on whether or not you've done the research around what those options may be for you.
So it makes common sense to give it your best swing, but given it's such a big deal, I think sometimes we expect too much of ourselves in knowing exactly where we go from here, and it's okay to go in with an open mind, just as long as you give this everything you got right now.
That's right. I mean, I think it was George Bernard Shaw, I could be wrong on the quote, said that, you know, the most interesting people he knew never had it sorted out by the time they were 30.
George would know. Thanks, Abe. Thanks for your call.
It's all right. Thank you very much.
Donna on Facebook, and I read verbatim, it's 4:43 a.m. and I still haven't fallen asleep. This is getting ridiculous. I cannot sleep, especially through the HSC. I haven't been sleeping for a while, in fact, for 2 weeks. Can we please get something that will help me sleep? What are your tips with sleep habits? Getting them started or maybe curtailing them if you're a little too relaxed.
That's true. I mean, I think in response to that particular comment, one of the things I heard a student do, I interviewed him a couple of years ago, Charles, and he found he had the same trouble. He'd study late into the night and then he'd go to sleep and his brain would be at fourth gear. His mind would be whirring 100 miles an hour and it would take him hours to turn his brain off to get to sleep. And so he ended up coming up with an interesting way to deal with it, which was every night he would finish up studying and watch a movie, even before an exam, because it meant that he had an hour and a half just to let his brain unwind, to switch off. So by the time he went to sleep, he was actually now on first gear instead of fourth. His brain was at 2 miles an hour instead of 100.
Yeah.
And he could go to sleep. So it could be, in the case of that example, actually spending some time to do something, a leisure activity, something you love before you go to sleep to help you make that transition. The other alternative is, you know, to just slowly start trying to move those sleeping times back a little bit. So if you're going to sleep at midnight, try 11:30.
Yeah.
Try 11 the day after. Something practical like that as well.
Donna, that was your daughter's SMS.
That's right.
So does that information that Rowan just shared feel like it's going to work? Do you have perhaps another observation based on your experience?
Well, I just told her she wanted to see if we could get some sleeping pills or something, and I said it's a terrible idea because it'll make you groggy. So, and you don't want to get into that habit anyway. So I told her to Google some rest and relaxation things. So we've been putting lavender oil on her pillow at night, and she has been watching a movie, you know, late at night to try and unwind a bit. We've been getting her out to exercise, like take her for a run in the afternoon. Like, it's worse than a toddler. Although she was a terrible sleeper as a baby as well.
Oh, well, clearly, with that kind of track record, you were always for it, weren't you, Mum?
We were always going to be in trouble, but she's very well prepared. So
we're going to get on to parenting tips in a moment, but are you feeling stressed looking at your daughter struggling to sleep?
I'm a bit worried about her not sleeping, but this is so much easier than last time I went through this because my older one was a bit more social, shall we say, and wasn't really into the whole study thing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she did enough to get through. She didn't get what she wanted, so she's had to work around it, but she's loving life at the moment anyway. But this child is watched what went on with the last one and decided to study right from the beginning of year 11, so she's really well prepared.
This sounds so much like my family. I was that first one who was social, shall we say, and my brother was without doubt the sharpest student in the household because he just so desperately didn't want to be me.
Exactly right. Exactly the same thing.
Yeah. Thanks for your call, and best of luck.
Thanks.
Bye. So let's turn to parents and relatives, Rowan, teachers and friends, the support network around us. Your book, which focuses on this, How to Support Your Child Through Year 11 and 12, it's an e-book. It's available right now to mums and dads, even at this point. Why did you write it?
I was doing a lot of workshops, and I'd find that I was getting a lot of parents turning up. The workshops were actually for students, and a number of parents would turn up, and it was because they wanted to know best how to support their child. You know, it was a stressful period, and they didn't know, you know, whether or not they should be maybe, you know, encouraging their child to do more study or to be actually getting him out of the study and having more of a balance. And so I had a lot of these questions and just didn't know what the best answers were and how to deal with it. And I thought I could do something.
You speak pretty directly in this book to mums and dads, making the kids responsible for their own achievements.
That's correct.
Why is that key?
Look, it's really key in the sense that otherwise what I've just found with the work that we've done with students that have done really well in the HSC is that it becomes, you know, something that you're doing for your parents. And motivation-wise, that's something that can run out really quickly.
Yeah, I felt that. Yeah, I did.
Yeah. Surely. And look, I mean, it's something that I think most students at some point have felt. And it's that critical sort of point where you're just moving into adulthood as well.
Yeah.
And it means that making students responsible for their success, I think, is really important because it makes them aware that it's, you know, it's that whole little if it's going to be, it's up to me. I mean, that's a really, really important idea that I think a lot of Year 12 students need to start internalizing as they go through it, so they've got that sustained motivation to get through to the end of the year. Where if it's something they're doing for their parents, you know, there is a bit of motivation there, but then you can, you know, you can start becoming a little rebellious, getting frustrated and going, oh, I don't want to do this because, you know, well, why am I doing it? My parents want me to do this. They're doing it for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, but then as a parent, we're looking on going, you're about to make the same mistakes I did, and I so desperately don't want you to do that. So what do I do with that?
Yeah. And look, and that's one of the tensions that I tried to address just from, again, students and parents that I guess had got that tension right. And I think there's certainly that importance of creating some accountability. I think, you know, it's certainly you want to make, you know, your student responsible for how they go. But that's certainly not just then completely stepping back and saying, well, here's all the mistakes, go and make them, see you later.
Yeah.
I think it's very much about still having dialogues and conversations with them around, hey, look, well, I made these mistakes, or from my experience, these are some things to think about. And drawing out the consequences, but then making it clear, look, it's your decision. If you make decisions in certain ways, be aware that these may be the consequences that you face.
Siblings that are close to each other find this a difficult time because they're being separated by the stress that their older or younger sibling is going through while they're doing their exams. What's your advice to brothers and sisters?
Brothers and sisters, there's a couple of ways that you can help out. One is to actually be there if your brother or sister wants to, you know, needs to teach someone, because teaching someone, as I said, is a really, really important piece of that studying routine. And often you don't have someone that you can necessarily communicate with. So if you're willing to, particularly over the next couple of weeks, sit there and listen to your sibling teach, it's a great way, A, to spend some time with your sibling, but as well to actually help them out in a really, really practical way.
So maybe volunteer it. Say, hey, I don't get this and I may never get it, but why don't you try and teach it to me and see how you go?
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Cool. For those of us who are friends of an HSC student, support from outside, same thing? Or are there other rules that apply to us?
I mean, look, same thing to some extent. I mean, I think the rule that I'd probably, or the guideline I recommend beyond that is, you know, make a point of being there to actually do something fun. Because I think it's really easy to lose focus of the fact that fun is what makes hard work sustainable.
Yeah.
If you're not having fun, particularly even over the next 3 weeks, it's going to be a very tough 3 weeks.
And in life generally.
That's exactly it. Another good tip is to view, and it sounds unusual, but to view study as a training session. I mean, you know, you learn to play a musical instrument, you learn to play sport, or you play sport, and you view it as that you've got particular times where you're going to be playing, you know, playing soccer or netball or going to a music lesson. And rather than letting study just eat into everything because it's the thing that you do when you're not doing something else,
yeah.
It's to say, well, look, I'm likewise, I've got a study session, and it's a predetermined period. It's, you know, maybe 3 to 6 p.m. And then afterwards, I get to do whatever I want. And it's having that conversation with your child around, okay, hey, like studying for 6 hours straight, it's actually not going to be effective anyway. So actually then collaborating and working with them to go, well, what might be more effective? And so rather than enforcing it on them and saying, well, you've got to go now and have some sunlight because you're going to get vitamin D deficiency, is to actually have a conversation and actually plan it with them.
Okay.
Yeah.
And be okay with them doing something else outside of study. I guess that's an important hurdle for a lot of parents to cross as well.
Definitely.
So let's reset the horizon, Rowan. After this next 3-4 weeks or maybe a little bit more are over, now to time, it's almost an anticlimax. Regardless of how we feel we've gone, it's not the end. So what comes next and how do we reset our focus?
And that's it's a really tough question because I know I found for myself personally, like when I went through the HSC, you work so hard for that final exam.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, it does feel a little like you're floating. You know, if you're at uni or otherwise, you've no longer got that really clear driving goal that you've been working towards. And that's where, you know, there isn't an easy answer to it. A lot of it is actually just putting yourself out there in terms of trying to experience a large range of opportunities and things. Because from that, I feel like that was what worked for me. Experienced and put my hand up for anything, and from doing that I got a sense of what I actually enjoyed doing, what I didn't like doing, and maybe what I wanted to pursue more of.
As mums and dads, we look on at what may appear to be confusion or loss. Regardless of the result, there's that sense of, wow, now what? When do we hit the panic button?
Hopefully never. I mean, a lot of people will hit the panic button, unfortunately, come early January, the first week, because your HSC results come out.
Yeah.
You get it and you think, your HSC results come out end of December, but yeah. Your uni offers come out then.
Yeah.
And if you miss out, that's when the panic buttons really start rising. My recommendation is have a plan before you get there, because the panic really sits in when you're uncertain of what's coming next. And so regardless of whether or not you've got the mark or not, there is different pathways. I mean, a lot of the most successful people I know now took very unconventional pathways to get to where they are.
Mm.
And it wasn't necessarily, you know, the sort of typical pathway of, you know, high school straight to uni, straight to workforce that they've pursued. So I think it's have a plan before you get to the panic stage, because that'll help reduce the panic.
What's your knowledge on the number of people who are doing what they trained to do straight after HSC? Because I'm not one of those. When I did my uni degree, there was a show of hands in the room about how many of us thought we would finish this degree and be what we were training to be. And then all but about 5 of us I know are actually doing it today. What's your experience?
Yeah, interesting. I mean, I think there's two sort of components to that. One is 1 in 5 students, when they get to uni, change their course.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, there's all that effort, all that angst to get there, and then 20% of students are going, hey, I'm going to do something different. I don't know, you know, I don't have a nice statistic to say what happens when you get to the workforce, but again, like your experience, I know I'm doing something very different to what I anticipated.
Yeah.
And I would say, you know, ballpark, I'd be able to say at least 2 to 3 out of 5 people I know are doing something different to maybe what they studied at uni. Related to an extent, but not necessarily, again, on that linear pathway that you might have expected and anticipated and hoped for.
1-300-40-2020 to Open House as we start to head towards the final notes of our conversation around senior school and HSC and the final exams. G'day, Jason. Welcome to Open House. You found the HSC experience a bit of a harrowing one.
Yeah,
so
I did.
What happened for you after you did it?
Oh, after the HSC?
Yeah.
I guess there was obviously what Rowan said, there was that period between your HSC and getting your results, which was different because you're not really at school anymore. You're just like sitting in limbo waiting for something to happen. For most people, that is. If you don't have like a job or like a huge social life, like going out every day, that's what you get. You just get like this huge limbo. And then when the... Hello?
Yes, we're still here.
And then when the results do come out, you just get this feeling like, oh, it's over. You know, like, there's no more school, no more high school, the HC is done, where do you go from now?
Yeah.
And I think what Rowan said is true. It's all about just putting yourself out there, which starts with your uni course, which you would have already chosen. And once you get from there, you'll just start experiencing things and, like, realizing what you want to do after. And that's why I think so many people change, because they don't have the experience to know what they want.
Jason, I understand you're a bit fearful as you entered uni, worrying about some of the factors that you might meet when you got there. What did your family and friends do around you to help you through that?
Well, I think mostly to friends. I was very lucky to have a few close primary school friends going to my uni. So from there, like, you know, you get into mutual friends and more socializing. And from there, you can gain more friends. And that's the problem I think many people have, is when they get into uni, they just don't know how to approach other people because they're so used to just this closed environment of their high school, which is, when you think about it, it's very closed. Like, you know these 100 people, 100 to 200 people for 6 years most of the time, and then you just get thrown into 40,000 students who you could talk to and become friends with.
And who are of vastly different ages, too, in that university context, aren't they?
Yeah. A lot of people are harrowed by that.
Yeah.
Like, they just don't feel like it's normal to be friends with people who are, like, 1 or 2 years older than them, because they've been friends with people the same age as them their whole life.
And some of them as old as your parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which gets kind of weird when you're in their class and they're doing their first year of uni.
Jason, thanks for your insights and all the best with what comes next in your life.
No worries. Thank you.
In our remaining time, let's just recap here. For students who are about to commence their exams, give us one piece of takeaway, because our heads are already stuffed full of other stuff. Where can we start right now?
Teach other people.
Number one.
Number one.
Parents who are looking at our kids struggling with whatever is going on in their lives. Perhaps they're feeling like they're ill-prepared, or perhaps they're just so completely stressed they've lost their horizon. How do we reconnect with our kids at a time when perhaps we've been part of the conversation that says this is all about the HSC?
That's a big question.
You've got 40 seconds.
I know. My recommendation is try to sit down with them and just have an honest conversation. I mean, about how they're feeling, about how you're feeling, and then maybe what the pathway is for them post the HSC exams. As I said, I think the thing that most people don't do is, beyond thinking about a single course at uni, they don't have a plan for beyond that. And I think that's where it's really important to have parents and students having that conversation around what that might look like.
Okay. And then to realize that even after this is finished, life is only just beginning. There is a whole lot more ahead of you than is behind you. And hang on to that hope for the time being if things don't go to plan.
Definitely.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.